And that was U.S. Girls with the song The Clearing here on the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew Zingle here with DJ Dang.
Good morning. We receive support from L&M Fleet Supply, carrying a variety of products for your next outdoor adventure with 13 locations across the Northland. More at lmsupply.com.
Support for KXE comes from the Timberlake Restaurant in Grand Rapids, featuring Martini Monday each week from 5 to 8 p.m. Information about this summer's Martini Monday music series is available at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, we are People Powered Radio in Northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
And support for KAXE comes from the Grand Rapids Players, presenting the Great Gatsby September 26th to 28th and October 3rd through 5th at the Rife in Grand Rapids. Celebrating the 100th anniversary since its original publishing, Friday through Saturday shows are at 7 and Sundays at 2. Tickets available at grplayers.com. Now for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. Minnesota renters who use Section 8 housing vouchers or other subsidies now enjoy the same eviction protections as all other renters, thanks to a Minnesota Supreme Court decision filed last week. The decision reverses precedent set by the Court of Appeals in 1995. The Minnesota Reformer explains that landlords in Minnesota can evict tenants over lease violations like using drugs or committing other crimes. But if a landlord accepts a rent payment after finding out about a lease violation, they can't evict the tenant over that specific breach of the lease. In other words, by accepting a rent payment despite knowing about a lease violation, the landlord waives their right to evict. This protection did not apply to renters who received public subsidies, including Section 8 housing vouchers. The Minnesota Human Rights Act prohibits landlords from discriminating against tenants who receive rental assistance. The court decision brings case law in line with state statutes. In less than 100 days, Minnesota's new paid leave law takes effect. Labor and business groups are getting the word out so that employers and employees are prepared. The law was approved in 2023 with ongoing implementation efforts since then. Starting January 1st of next year, most workers can apply for up to 12 weeks of medical leave or 12 weeks of family leave. It's managed by the state with a payroll tax evenly split between the employer and employee to cover partial wage replacements for time off. Maureen Dunaway with the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees says that like unemployment insurance, these new guarantees will serve as a bridge during major life events.
An economy does better when the people that have to participate in that economy have the ability to keep it sustained. And, you know, that financial security reduces stress.
MAPE is putting out consistent messaging to its members so they know about qualifying events and other details. While the law is celebrated for improving worker stability, skeptics worry about administrative burdens for small firms. Lauren Schotthorst with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce says they recognize the importance of paid leave, but still prefer private sector solutions. She says the pending changes follow several other new employment laws, putting extra pressure on smaller businesses focused on scaling up.
It's been a real big compliance challenge across the board. This is another one. It's one of the final ones over the past 3 years, and we want to make sure businesses recognize it's going into effect and how close they are to that deadline.
Thanks to Minnesota News Connection for this story. Numerous coat drives are offered throughout northern Minnesota as the inevitable winter approaches. Although the weather outside is unseasonably warm at the moment, now is the time to donate. Larissa Donovan has more.
Clean and gently used coats and other winter items will be accepted through Tuesday, October 7th, ahead of the United Way of Bemidji area's planned distribution of coats at First Lutheran the following Saturday. Winter gear for men, women, children, and infants can be dropped off at either Lucan's Village Food Store or Dress Club Cleaners downtown. The Brainerd YMCA and Knights of Columbus are accepting donations for children's outerwear in the Brainerd area through October 8th. The Coats for Kids distribution will take place October 18th at the Westgate Mall. The United Methodist Church of Grand Rapids is hosting the Open Door Coat Rack, an annual event sponsored by area churches and volunteers. Donations of clean, gently used outerwear on hangers will be accepted at the church beginning Saturday, October 18th, with a two-day distribution starting Wednesday, October 22nd. Larissa Donovan, KAXE News.
The Minnesota Department of Transportation is starting a pavement resurfacing project on Highway 2 in Cohasset on Wednesday. Work will be taking place between East Bass Lake and Pin Cherry Roads. Motorists can expect lane closures and shifts, and work is expected to be complete on October 10th. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources State Forest Nursery will open seedling sales for spring 2026 at 9 a.m. on Wednesday. Landowners across Minnesota can order native bare root tree seedlings for their properties. This year, the DNR is launching a new online ordering system. Seedling sales remain open through April 3rd or until stock is sold out. That's it for the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is made possible by Woodland Bank, serving the area since 1920 with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Woodland Bank believes in building community and serving local nonprofits like KAXE.
You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show. Coming up next, we're going to hear more from Maury Edition talking about a new NPR poll and the Democrats' response on the shutdown.
We received support from the Bagley Area Arts Collaborative, offering workshops in October, Mixed Media Animal Portrait on October 17th to the 19th, and The History and Harvesting of Clay on October 22nd, both held at 9 Central Street West in Bagley. More information and registration at bagleyarts.org or on Facebook.
And we received support from the Move It Real Estate Group, assisting clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. Move to what moves you. More at moveitrealestate.com. And coming up in about an hour, we're going to have a conversation talking about an upcoming sketch comedy show that will be happening at the Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork. That will be coming up in just a bit. You'll have a deadline to register for that event is October 5th. That will be coming up in an hour.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel in Washington, D.C.
And I'm A. Martinez in Los Angeles, California. The federal government is shut down after Republicans and Democrats in the Senate could not agree on a funding bill. A new NPR PBS News Marist poll is out this morning, and it found that more people would blame Republicans for a shutdown. In a few minutes, we'll speak with Democratic Representative Rosa DeLauro about her party strategy.
First, though, more details from that poll. It found the overwhelming majority believe children should be vaccinated before they're going to school, and that it's more important to control gun violence rather than protect gun rights.
NPR senior political editor and correspondent Domenico Montanaro has all the numbers. So, Domenico, let's start with the shutdown. What did the poll find?
Yeah, Republicans get more of the blame, 38 to 27, though. That's not close to a majority. In 2019, during what was the longest government shutdown in history, over a month, 50% or more blamed Trump. Now, 31% would blame both parties equally. Trump and Republicans get low approval ratings, but Democrats in Congress are worse. Just 25% approve of them. That's because of Democrats, by the way. Less than half approve of members of their own party in Congress. So a lot of politics to play here as the shutdown goes on.
Now, one thing that really jumps out in this survey, which you've written about this morning on NPR.org, the idea that more people believe they might have to resort to violence to fix things. I mean, how many people are we talking about?
Yeah, the number is up to 30% who think that they may have to resort to violence to get the country back on the right track. That's up 11 points from when we asked that question in April of last year.
So what do you think is driving that?
Largely, it's changed views among some Democrats. I mean, they've gone from just 12% saying violence might be necessary to now 28%. That's a pretty big jump. But Republicans are higher still at 31%. That's also a marginal increase from last year. And even a quarter of independents are saying this now. You know, it's important to remember, though, 70% of people do not feel this way. More than three quarters say political violence is a major problem. And other polling has shown that when specific acts of violence are polled, the numbers are much lower. Still, it's pretty alarming, though, that people are increasingly feeling this way.
Yeah. Now, okay, let's get to free speech, something we've been talking about a lot since Jimmy Kimmel was taken off the air for a week after the Trump administration pressured ABC and its affiliates. So how are people feeling about free speech in America?
Well, they're not feeling like it's very free. Roughly 8 in 10 say they think that the country's gone too far in restricting speech. That crosses political lines, with almost 9 in 10 Democrats and independents saying this, as well as almost 2/3 of Republicans. Remember, conservatives were the ones who were saying for years that they felt that their speech, their free speech rights, were being curtailed on college campuses and online. So a lot of people now have gripes with what can and can't be said in the country, and that's showing up in this poll. People also believe the federal government should play a minimal role in regulating speech. Just 15% said they think it should be a major role. It should have a major role in doing so. 44% said it should play only a minor one. Another 4 in 10 said it should play no role at all.
All right, now to the National Guard being deployed to cities and what President Trump says is a plan to reduce crime and assist law enforcement. Trump says he's been focusing on places such as Memphis, Portland, Oregon, and also Chicago. How are people feeling about whether they want them in their city?
Yes, the majority, 52%, support the effort, but mostly because of how strongly Republicans feel about it. 90% of Republicans are in favor, compared to majorities of Democrats and independents who are opposed. For Democrats, 3/4 are opposed to it, 60% strongly so. Makes for a really polarizing issue.
And one more really quick, the Epstein files. How do people feel about that?
More than 6 in 10 disapprove of Trump's handling of the files related to the late financier who died in prison by suicide 5 years ago. 3/4 want them fully released with victims' names redacted.
NPR senior political editor and correspondent Domenico Montanaro, thanks.
You got it.
Democrats objected yesterday when the House convened for less than 5 minutes, long enough to recite the Pledge of Allegiance, and then adjourned without taking up any business.
Pursuant to Clause 13 of Rule 1, the House stands adjourned until 3:30 p.m. on Friday, October 3rd at 2025.
One of the lawmakers on the Democratic side of the House was Representative Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut. She's the ranking member on the House Appropriations Committee. Good morning, and thank you for being on the program.
Good morning. It's lovely to be with you today.
So you were in the House yesterday asking to be recognized, and you weren't. Mm-hmm. What did you want to say?
Well, what I wanted to do was have the opportunity. But when I was, it was rejected. Your clip is right. They gaveled me down. What I wanted to do was to offer a bill. This was the a continuing resolution alternative that Senator Patty Murray and myself offered that would stop the government shutdown. It would keep the government funded through October 31st, avoid the shutdown, allow for bipartisan negotiations to continue over full year spending bills. And that way, it would ensure that Congress, not the president, or Russ Vought, the head of the Office of Management and Budget, will determine how taxpayer dollars are spent.
Now, Republicans are blaming Democrats for the shutdown. Democrats are blaming Republicans. We just heard the results of a new NPR PBS News Marist poll that said just 1 in 4 people approve of how Democrats in Congress are doing. And that's not great for your party. Is this shutdown a bid to improve your standing with voters?
You know, let's put polling aside. I listened to the polling data and mm-hmm. know something about polls. 38%, 27% say that, Republicans will be to blame. Let's just take, what is the fact of the matter here. Republicans chose to shut down the government rather than get into a bipartisan negotiation with Democrats. I have chaired the Appropriations Committee. I'm the ranking member. I have negotiated appropriations bills with Senator Shelby in Alabama, with Congresswoman Granger, with Congressman Cole, with Senators Murray and Collins, Senator Leahy. We have done it. It was a bipartisan negotiation. So now, what is at the center of this? What is at the center of this fight? It is over the healthcare crisis that has been caused by the Republicans. 20 million Americans are going to see their healthcare costs skyrocket. 15 million people are going to be jettisoned from Medicaid. They're going to decimate Medicaid. This is historic. This has not happened in U.S. history. In addition, Hospitals were shut down, nursing homes shut down, clinics.
Can I ask you a question on that? I mean, Senate Republican leader John Thune said he's open to talking about extending the Obamacare subsidies. He's open to negotiation. He doesn't want it to be tied to stopgap spending bill.
Well, so, I'm going to answer your question because that sounds wonderful. And if you really have been engaged and involved with what's gone on, deals, if you will, made with Republican leadership, all of that has been abrogated. All of it abrogated. Quite frankly, there is no trust factor. We have watched during this period of time, first Elon Musk, in January, President Trump illegally fires 17 inspectors generally. January 27th, they illegally freeze vast swaths of financial assistance. Musk and Trump look at dismantling government. There's a whole litany of what they have done. And, you know, I tell you, if you trust what they say they're going to do, I've got a bridge that I'm going to sell you. I mean that. It is really impossible. In the midst of these negotiations, Russ Vogt, who is the mastermind of this effort and who wants a shutdown, and he said, his words are very clear, there should be less bipartisanship. The President of the United States said it's a waste of time to negotiate with Jeffries and Schumer, and the Republicans rally around, jam this Republican continuing revolution down the Democrats' throat. Now, you tell me if that acts in good faith, and Mr. Vogt introduced a bill that would continue to steal the money appropriated by Democrats and Republicans, House and Senate, as we're into these negotiations.
This shutdown is a reality now, right? I mean, it's impacting Americans right now. And Democrats said they were worried back in March that a shutdown would hand the president more power over the federal workforce. Yeah. The president is now threatening mass layoffs. What's changed that worry is no longer here?
Well, the president, I mean, this threat of mass layoffs is really so disingenuous because we have been dealing with mass layoffs, you know, for the last several months. You've got 17,000 people gone from the Department of Health and Human Services, 12,000 people gone from the Veterans Administration. It's rampant that what they have been doing, just on whim, with no discussion. And let me just say this: we had discussed in appropriations coming to a bipartisan discussion, which is the case on. Bipartisan discussion, which we can't do. And it's about the healthcare crisis. And the issue is healthcare is one of the things that drives the cost up for people every single day, that their cost of living. What we need to do is to make sure that the cuts are no longer there, that we address the cost of living, and we save healthcare for the American people. That is what's on the line. That's what Democrats are prepared to do.
Representative Rosa DeLauro, Democrat from Connecticut, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Today is the first day in our entire history at NPR that we are fulfilling our public mission without federal funding. And we are still here. With your support, my co-hosts and I will be here every morning, and our journalists around this country and the world will keep you informed. We're not going anywhere because we're powered by you, the public, and we're accountable to you, the public. This is NPR News.
Morning Edition here on KAXE KBXE People Power Radio. My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I'm here with DJ Dang.
Hello.
And looking at the weather today, it's going to be cloudy day with highs 78 to 82 degrees. That's pretty warm. South winds 10 to 17 miles per hour. Tonight, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 a.m. Cloudy with temps 60 to 63. Wind south wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, sunny, highs in the high 70s, low 80s, south winds 5 to 10 miles per hour, evening lows near 55. And Friday, partly sunny with highs 80 to 86 degrees.
I don't think I've ever watered my garden in October, but it might happen. And then like today or tomorrow.
You still got stuff growing in there, huh?
Still some broccoli coming up. I had a cauliflower that kind of needs to finish itself. I tried to get some late season lettuce going. It's almost not really happening, but I'm going to water it just in case.
Mm-hmm.
And get some October lettuce. That'd be awesome.
Mm.
But yeah, chard and kale, those kind of hardier things are still sticking around.
Love some chard.
Yeah.
So speaking of vegetables.
Wait a minute. Do you really love chard?
I like chard.
Because I super do. I think chard's awesome.
I put it in my smoothies.
It's easier to grow than spinach, I think.
Okay.
I like it a lot.
I don't know the difference. I never tried.
I thought you were being sarcastic about chard, and I was going to defend the greatness of chard.
Nope. I make spinach smoothies with kale, chard, and I forget what the fourth thing is.
Another green thing?
A, yeah.
Artichoke?
No.
Asparagus?
No. It's like a leafy thing.
Begins with an A?
Yeah.
Leafy thing.
It's not azul, but it's something like azul. I know azul is Spanish and blue. Please don't text us about what azul means. I know.
No, we're waiting for those Halloween costume texts.
Yeah, where's the Halloween costume text?
We haven't gotten any, have we?
No.
Come on, people.
Speaking of the text line and vegetables, we have our question of the week. What do you remember about grocery stores from when you were young? You can text us at 218-326-1234. Dan, what's your grocery store?
No,
memories?
You have to go first. You grew up in a small town.
Yeah, but so we wouldn't go to my small town grocery store very much because we lived in the country. But my mom worked in Thief River Falls, so we'd go to the grocery store there.
Yeah,
which was a Hugo's.
A Hugo's?
Yeah.
Is that the owner's name? Did that only exist in Thief River Falls?
No, it existed in Grand Forks and Crookston as well.
Oh, okay.
So it's like a small chain.
Yeah.
And what I remember about that, I remember getting like comics from the magazine rack.
Nice.
From over there.
Yeah.
And then just hanging around. I remember one time my brother and I were really like roughhousing one day. And this guy with a big beard came up to us. He said, like, if you guys are looking for a fight, I'll be waiting for you in the parking lot.
Who was he?
I don't know.
Is he like a wannabe security guard? Like, doesn't actually work for
the
store?
I think
it was
just some guy that was messing with kids that he saw roughhousing. And my mom was, like, at her, oh, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, fed up with dealing with us.
Was arugula the green you were thinking
of? Oh, arugula. Yeah, that could be it.
We just got a text, but the text won't open. I got notified of it, so you'd have to look on your device.
Okay.
But a listener texted us in and suggested arugula was the leafy green that Andrew adds to his all-green smoothies, which, I'm just going to be honest, I'm shocked that you drink an all-green smoothie.
What does that mean? Well, it's got bananas in it.
Okay. Still.
And yogurt.
Yeah. Sounds crazy healthy, and I just don't.
You know,
think
I got
of you
the
as
advice.
A crazy healthy eater guy.
Okay. I got the advice from a former coworker. He said his daughter was drinking these when she was pregnant at the time, and the doctor was like, wow, you've got a really healthy metabolism or whatever.
Are you with child, Andrew?
No.
I'm waiting.
I was like, that's easy enough to make. I can add leafy greens and bananas and yogurt, and it tastes good.
Yeah. I have all those things, but I've never made it like a green smoothie.
Yeah, they taste delicious.
Do they really?
Mm-hmm.
I would think it'd be kind of bitter and...
Well, the banana is like such a strong flavor.
Sweetens it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then with that yogurt, some people will say like, why don't you add a liquid? But like the yogurt's the liquid part.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then once you.
For sure.
But anyway, what's your grocery tales?
Well, I mainly grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. So it was a big grocery store in the Chicago area. It was called Jules, but you'd pronounce it like Jules. Mm. Like, oh, we're going to the Jules. The whole duh thing, like that was a legit thing in Chicago. I mean, it's overplayed now, but people do talk like that. So yeah, oh, I got to go to the Jules and get whatever. So it's just a huge grocery chain, nothing particularly memorable about it for me, other than the pronunciation of it, the Jules.
What about like when you're at the checkout and like, you know, there's that Archie comic right there?
I always looked at the comic racks, but then... Rarely ever got the comics. I don't remember why. I don't remember if my folks were like, no, we're not going to pay 10 more cents for that comic or whatever they cost back then. Or if it was just like, I would see like issue number 55 and I'm like, well, I already missed the other 52 or 54. What's the point? You know, that kind of thing. But it did make me wonder, how did the comics industry get those racks in gas stations and grocery stores? Like, how did that happen where they're like, hey, would you put a rack of these in here?
Well, what the system used to be is you could return the comics. So if you didn't sell them, you could return them to the comic book distribution. But that changed where you can't do it anymore. And that's why they're not at grocery stores anymore.
Because it's such a widespread phenomena, like in big towns and small. Mm-hmm. It was kind of, in now that I'm thinking about it, which I had never thought about it before, it seemed like a fairly amazing feat for a kind of a niche industry of reading and art.
Well, I'm in the strong supporter that they should be back at grocery stores because that's how you get readers. But
yeah, I think it'd be cool.
Well, that's what you can do. But what do you remember about grocery stores from when you were young? What was the name of the local grocery store in yours? We've got Hugo's and Jules.
The Jewels.
So you can text us at 218-326-1234. I miss the old Hugo's logo because it was like such a 80s looking logo where it was like yellow, orange, and like a little bit of red colors, like when that was all the rage.
You should make t-shirts, reprint the logo, and you'd be like the hottest commodity in northwestern Minnesota.
That is a good idea.
Big H, Hugo's.
Well, it was Hugo's, but each letter had its own sign. It was kind of wild.
Okay.
For a while, for a grocery store, I guess. Yeah. But we want to hear from you. Text us on the text line. But now it's time for our weekly segment here on the Wednesday Morning Show where we play something from the KBXC Vinyl Library. And this time I handed things over to DJ Dang to select the record.
I went in the vinyl library here at KBXC, which stores a majority of the vinyl that used to be collected at KAXC over 40 years and now is living here. And I picked a record by Alice Gerard, and I think, can you look at the record, Andrew? It's Alice Gerard and
Mike Seeger.
And Mike Seeger. And Alice Gerard, probably a lot of our listeners would recognize her as being, as doing a lot of music with Hazel Dickens, who's a legendary Appalachian folk singer and musician, and Alice Gerard was right there with her, so I didn't know she had records outside of her recordings with Hazel Dickens, so I was curious, and we're going to hear a traditional song called Pretty Polly.
I stayed around in town.
Dallas Gerard and Mike Seeger with the traditional tune Pretty Polly. I believe Mike Seeger's no relation to Pete. It would have said so right on the record. But anyways, cool old tune from them. And we received support from Dale's Auto Body, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984, performing auto body and collision repair, as well as auto glass replacement, dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information at dalesautobodyinc.com.
And we receive support from the First State Bank of Big Fork, with branches in Big Fork and Kellyer, offering tools for managing money on any mobile device. Hometown banking as best since 1912. FSBBigFork.com, member FDIC.
Support for this program comes from Sanford Health, with primary care locations in Bemidji and across the upper Midwest. Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more at sanfordhealth.org.
And special shout out to Dave from Shevlin. He was the one who helped us figure out it was arugula that old Andrew was thinking of.
You know what Dave does with arugula?
What?
He chops it, smashes it, boxes it up, boils it, crushes it.
Oh, yeah.
He does. It's a fact.
Boxes it?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Whatever can be done to arugula, it's happening out there in Shevlin.
Time now for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary for today, October 1st.
Happy anniversary to Adam Tritt and Lisa Harrington from Chisholm. And Jerry and Darla Sathry are celebrating their 48th anniversary from Bemidji. And our old volunteer coordinator, Brett Carter, and his wife, Wendy, are celebrating their 14th anniversary, also in Bemidji. And Jeff and Mary Grilling in Their Shorts Coons. That's what it says here. Jeff and Mary Grilling in Their Shorts Coons are celebrating their 20th anniversary down in Smyrna, Georgia.
And a happy birthday to Kate Campa in Grand Rapids, celebrating their 27th birthday today. In Bemidji, Jill Terrell is celebrating a birthday today. Happy birthday. And Donna Flattery in Cohasset, celebrating their 75th birthday today. Happy birthday. And now, to celebrate these birthdays anniversaries, we're going to play a tune for you. This is Shouse with Vance Joy. This song is called Wherever You Are.
There was a time.
And that was Wherever You Are by Shouse and Vance Joy. If you have a birthday or anniversary to share, text us at 218-326-1234. You know, I saw Vance Joy live once.
Oh, I'm supposed to say something nice about that?
Yeah, ask me where I saw
it. Hey, Andrew, where did you see Vance Joy at?
At the Fargo Dome. Do you know who he was opening for?
Elton John.
No.
That's a good guess. Because he played the Fargo Dome.
Yes, yeah, that's true. So, by that logic, Red Hot Chili Peppers would be a good guess.
Okay, I'll guess Red Hot Chili Peppers.
No, it wasn't them either.
Come on.
The Strokes opened for them, if you can believe it.
Wait a minute. Strokes opened up for Vance Joy or Vance Joy opened up for the Strokes?
No, Red Hot Chili Peppers. The Strokes
I'm
opened
confused.
For the Red Hot Chili
I thought we were
Peppers.
Talking about Vance Joy.
Yeah, but...
Who did he open up for?
Taylor Swift.
Oh.
I saw Taylor Swift.
Wow.
The 1989 tour.
What year was that in? Obviously not 1989.
2015,
okay,
I believe.
It's confusing, kind of like your band t-shirt today. It's confusing.
Why is it confusing?
So Andrew's wearing a t-shirt. He's a frequent wearer of band t-shirts, for those of you that don't work in the KBXE office. And he has a Franz Ferdinand t-shirt on, which is a band from Scotland.
Glasgow.
And the image on the t-shirt is of the Parthenon, which is in Greece. And it says Franz in big letters, in a kind of a Greek style, and then in small letters, Ferdinand, and then a huge picture of the Parthenon, and then it says Glasgow, as if the Parthenon is in Glasgow. And we know it's not. We know for 100%.
We don't know that for sure because there's a Parthenon in Nashville.
I've been to Glasgow. I saw no Parthenon.
Well, maybe they got a new one.
I mean, I didn't go very far outside the train station because in the 80s when you went to Glasgow, it said in the Let's Go Europe book, don't leave the train station. You will get stabbed. I don't think it's that way anymore, but Glasgow was pretty sketchy back in the day. So, yeah, I'm a little confused.
Well,
by that
not
shirt.
Every shirt has to make sense.
Okay. So you can't even explain it yourself.
I can't. I don't know why they did it, but it was blue, and that's my favorite color, and I love Franz Ferdinand, so I had to get it. That is DJ Ding. I'm Andrew DeZingle. We're your Wednesday morning show crew, and we're here until 9 o'clock. And then it's going to be Headwaters. And in about less than a half hour, we're going to be talking about the sketch comedy show that will be coming to Big Fork at the Edge Center for the Arts. That'll be our first Area Voices. And then about an hour, we're going to have another Area Voices where we talk about the Verse Like Water program that happens at Central Lakes College beginning next Wednesday. Coming up, though, we're going to be hearing more from Maury Edition talking about Gaza protesters ruling. That'll be coming up in just a bit. So, Dan, when it's like... Do you have, like, fall activities? Is there anything, like, you like to do during the fall time?
Probably, that was our question of the week last week, and my answer for that was every fall, my partner and I bike around the Wilderness Drive down in Lake Itasca State Park, and it's basically a roller coaster for cycling. That road is just so much fun. It's the pavement is smooth. It's hilly in a way that you just kind of keep going. You can get up a lot of speed, and it's gorgeous. The leaves are falling, and that's probably it's for sure a tradition we have and probably our favorite fall thing to do is to do that bike ride.
Exciting.
What about you?
When are you going to be doing it?
Maybe this Sunday. It's got to be in the next couple of weeks, I think, because colors are popping.
Yeah, that... my girlfriend and I, we like to go to Itasca to go to the fire tower and climb that up. For fall colors.
Nice.
So I'll probably do that probably next week. It's probably going to happen.
And I know I've been up to the top of that fire tower and you get a massive view of the surrounding area, but I always think of it as primarily pine trees. And so there's not a ton of color. Am I wrong?
No, there's lots of colors.
There is?
There. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And one year we saw two beavers in the little pond next to the fire tower.
From the top of the fire tower?
No. On the way up to the fire tower.
You have some high-powered binoculars. I see a mosquito.
But, yeah, those beavers were hard working.
That's cool.
So that'll be coming up. Let us know what you're doing during this time of year, Texas, at 218-326-1234. Now we're going to hear more from Morning Edition.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel.
And I'm A. Martinez. A federal judge in Boston has ruled that the Trump administration is violating the Constitution by trying to deport non-U.S. citizens just because they've protested in support of Palestinians or criticized Israel. U.S. District Court Judge William Young on Tuesday called it possibly the most important case ever to reach the federal court he serves on. NPR's Adrian Florido has been covering this. What did the judge have to say in his ruling?
Well, Judge Young called the Trump administration's attempts to deport non-citizens because of their Palestinian activism unconstitutional violations of their rights to free speech. He wrote that it's carrying out a full-throated assault on the First Amendment. The evidence A presented during a 9-day trial that the judge held in July, he wrote, clearly showed that Homeland Security and State Department officials have been misusing their powers to silence protesters' protected political speech. And he wrote that he was especially disturbed by the methods immigration agents have been using to arrest people, especially their use of face masks, which the judge wrote seemed intended to, quote, terrorize Americans into quiescence.
You know, a lot of these pro-Palestinian students that ICE agents started arresting and trying to deport soon after Trump took office have their own cases going against the government. So who brought this particular case and why?
Well, this case was brought by several academic associations, and their goal was to convince the judge that the government has what they call an ideological deportation policy aimed at silencing the specific pro-Palestinian academics that were being arrested, but also aimed at scaring others into not speaking up about Palestinian rights. They called government officials to the stand during the trial to prove this, and DHS officials testified that they compiled the names of thousands of pro-Palestinian activists starting early this year and created dossiers on many of them. They sent those files to officials at the State Department with recommendations that visas or green cards be revoked, and officials at State testified at trial that they acted on those recommendations.
How did the government defend itself?
Well, government lawyers denied that there is a specific policy. They said that officials have simply been using existing immigration laws to go after people that President Trump believes pose a threat to national security. Trump and his top officials often accuse pro-Palestinian activists of being anti-Semitic and of being supporters of Hamas terrorism. But in his ruling, Judge Young noted the government presented no evidence to back these claims up. So the key question, he wrote, was whether non-citizens legally in the U.S. have the same free speech rights as the rest of us. And here's how he answered that question in writing. Quote, the court answers this constitutional question unequivocally. Yes, they do.
Okay, now what's the reaction been?
Well, in a statement, a DHS spokeswoman called Judge Young, who was appointed by President Reagan, by the way, a, quote, craven judge who is smearing and demonizing ICE law enforcement. A lawyer for the academics celebrated the ruling and said that if the First Amendment means anything, it means the government can't imprison people simply because it disagrees with their political views.
You know, his ruling, the judge didn't actually tell the government to stop going after these students. So what are the next steps?
Well, Judge Young said that he will soon hold a hearing to help him decide on a remedy aimed at getting the government to comply with the Constitution. But he also noted that he's worried he won't actually be able to get the government to do that because he wrote that when it comes to laws and regulations, quote, President Trump simply ignores it all. Those are his words.
That's NPR's Adrian Florido. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, A.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm E. Martinez.
And I'm Leila Fadel.
And you're listening to Morning Edition here on member-supported radio, KAXE, KBXE. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with DJ Dang.
Good morning. We receive support from AW Research Laboratories located in Brainerd, providing water testing for private wells, real estate, lakes, and wastewater since 1972, online at awlab.com.
And we receive support from the Watermark Art Center in downtown Bemidji with exhibits, classes, and handcrafted original art made by regional artists found in their Shop 505. The center is accessible and open to the public. WatermarkArtCenter.org. And coming up in a bit, we're going to be talking about sketch comedy. And DJ Dang, you lived in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the one of the hubs of sketch comedy. Did you ever... You never went to any sketch comedy?
No, I'm shaking my head. No. No. Yeah, it's kind of Shocking in a way. Yeah, I never went to Second City or any. My brother's super into improv comedy stuff in Chicago. Like, he doesn't perform it, but he goes to it fairly regularly.
But while you were there, was it something like people talked about? Because that would have been like around like the Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray times, I would say.
Well, that would have, I think when I was like a high school, like 18, 19 years old is around when Blues Brothers movie came out. So those guys were already,
already
a name and already on Saturday Night Live and da 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 da. So they would have been, they would have blown up out of the Chicago scene years before that. But no, just because me and my friends were just super duper into going to punk rock shows, and that's mainly all we did and talked about. We were living that life.
No room for laughs.
We laughed just to, at our own jokes. We were our own improv.
So would you ever, would you on a like a dare ever do a sketch comedy, like improv?
Ooh, probably not. That'd be scary as heck.
I mean, you've done a story slam and sort of improv.
Yeah, but that's part of my life. Like, I live that story, you know? And I know the story. And yeah. I know it's a good one. I have several more good ones that I'm just waiting for the right moment. But comedy is more like, if the people don't laugh, you're failing.
Yeah. Do you got any impressions you do?
No, I don't do impressions.
You don't do any impressions? No, not a single one?
No, I don't think so. No.
All right. Well, we'll think about it.
I mean, the impressions I do would be too much. It would be like people we know, and then be too close to like act, kind of making fun of them in a not nice way. So I'm not going to do those.
Do an impression of me.
No. We still got an hour and 10 minutes to go on this morning show.
You're going to be that hurtful in your impression?
Well, it would be funny if I could. I can't think of exactly what I would do to do Andrew DeZingle.
Would you ever do a roast? Like, let's say it's your birthday and they're like, Dan, we're going to do a roast of you. Would you participate?
I would have to participate in my own roast or just sit there cringy laughing for
like
an hour.
People are roasting you.
Yeah,
for an hour.
One, I deserve it. So I mean,
but then you get to roast them at the end. Isn't that like how roasts work?
I don't think so.
I thought the person that's like the main person,
they come back at all the other.
Like, yeah.
No, maybe they do. Maybe they do. Yeah. Well, that would be fun, and I should laugh at myself more because I do enough ridiculous things that I could be called out on it in a comedic way, and then coming back at all the people, that'd be the best part.
I think I could last maybe like 5 minutes of getting roasted, and then I'm like, all right, I'm done with this.
Yeah, would you just get mad?
Yeah, I would get mad. I'd be like, this stinks. People are just talking trash
about
me. That's
not exactly true. Or, I don't talk like that.
I just have a notebook writing down all my grievances with their roasts.
And their addresses. Joe from 555 America Avenue said.
You think Joe would say something?
Not that Joe. Just Joe. Generic Joe.
So, time now to hear from our album of the week. This week it is Nico Case's Neon Gray Midnight Green. It is her 8th solo album and her first since 2018's Hell On. Yeah, I was just thinking that. It's been a long time since we've had a Nico Case album. Do you have like a history with Nico Case?
I have no history with, I've never met the person, never talked to them, and maybe only a couple songs am I like, oh, that's cool. I really like them. I find them to be an intriguing band nonetheless.
Yeah, I was a big fan of that side project she did in that supergroup, Case, Lang, Veers. They released one album together. I really enjoyed that. But Nico Case, I want to say the first time I heard of Nico Case was maybe back in 2009, I think, whatever that album was. But I think that was already like four albums deep, so I was kind of late on Nico Case.
Do we not have a on-air a volunteer DJ who opens or closes their show with This Little Light of Mine? Oh. Her version of, it's like a live version. It's really, really good. Somebody, it's like,
yeah,
their signature
song.
But
I can't remember who that is.
Yeah.
If you remember who that volunteer DJ is, or if you're listening, text us at 218-326-1234. And while we're waiting, we're going to play a tune from this new Nico Case album. And this song is called Little Gears.
Spider build a web, assumed it was a three-day event, as intricate as they are, as fragile as they are. But she finished it in less than an hour. I felt cheated by how easy it was. No mistakes, no missteps.
This is The Setlist on KAXC, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malachi Coons. We are looking at four shows this Friday and Saturday, October 3rd and 4th, in Nisswa, Duluth, and Bemidji. First up, Eli Gardner is playing Jack Pine Brewery in Nisswa this Friday at 6 p.m. An Americana, gravelly-voiced singer-songwriter who blends folk, rock, and blues with stories of working class and everyday folks. His last album arrived in 2023, but he's released a handful of singles so far this year. Eli Gardner, this Friday, at Jack Pine Brewery in Nisswa. On to Saturday for a pair of events in Duluth. First, the Lilith Fest runs from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at Chester Bowl Park. Inspired by the Lilith Fair Festival of the 90s, the Lilith Fest features an all-women or non-male identifying lineup, including acclaimed folk singer Galen Lee, rising Americana duo The Penny Peaches, Jerry Small, and many more. 11 to 7 this Saturday in Duluth. Then, Canadian country and western singer Coulter Wall is also playing at 7:30 at the Deck Symphony Hall. Known for his deep voice and Townes Van Zandt-inspired songwriting, Wall has been a leading figure in country music since the mid-teens, a and recently announced his latest album, Memories and Empties, due out in November. It's Culture Wall this Saturday at The Deck in Duluth. Finally, there is a punk and metal show late Saturday evening at Rail River Folk School in Bemidji. Four bands are on the lineup, including Bemidji groups Rotten Sardines playing punk and metal from Noxious Ghoul. Music begins at 9 p.m. at the Folk School, and the event is hosted by Sundown Records. The set list is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
And you're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with DJ Ding. We just heard from our Nico Case album of the week, Neon Gray Midnight Green. Let us know what you think of the album of the week by texting 218-326-1234. Speaking of the text line, we missed quite a few texts here, and we'll get through them right now. So we were talking about grocery stores experiences, and we heard from Kim. I grew up in Bemidji. I loved walking to IGA with friends and siblings to buy a treat with money I had saved. And Andrew, what do you think of being the green giant for Halloween? My problem with that is putting green paint all over me. That part does not appeal to me.
You could just do your face and neck.
That's true, and then I just get like green
long sleeve green,
and pants. So, all right, I'll put it in the consideration.
You'd need the
pile.
Wreath, the like laurel wreath on your head.
I don't think he has that. I think he just has green hair.
Okay, I'm going to check this out.
All right, so thank you, Kim, for sending that. And then we heard from Jim Gallagher. My first punch the time clock job back in the 70s was as a bag boy at a Jewel grocery store outside of Chicago.
The Jewels.
To this day, I am still very picky about bagging groceries. Cans on the bottom, bananas on the top, etc. Thank you, Jim. And we heard from Heather. Hey, DJ Ding, here are a few picks from my hiking trip in northern England with your pal Audrey Creed and Shannon Costner. I'll get back on the volunteer calendar in October.
Oh, my goodness.
So you'll have to check out those pictures, Dan.
Yeah.
And then we heard from Mark from Northeast. 1965, 5 years old. Red Owl in Deer River with Grandma Cracker Jacks and overripe bananas to go home and make bread for the hunters.
What's Grandma Cracker Jacks? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I wonder if it meant like it was Cracker Jacks and bananas was used to make the snacks together.
Oh, okay.
I think I read them too close together.
Okay.
And then we heard from Dave Murphy. Wasn't me, but Nico also did fantastic work with New Pornographers, as you may well know. And I forgot that she was on the New Pornographers.
Yeah, we were just talking about that off air.
All right. We received support from Minnesota Power, an elite company envisioning a carbon-free